Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Chris Johnson, who is VP of Research and Development at Lean Logistics. And today we're going to talk about executing your transportation strategy, the essential role of transportation management technology. Now, this is a third in a series of episodes that we've been doing, really focusing on, the essential attributes of building a strong transportation management foundation. And in the first episode, we kind of talked about what some of those basic elements are. In the second episode, we talked about kind of the key things that go into defining a strategy. And today, we're going to talk about the role of technology in helping to execute on that strategy. And, Chris is, I've had the opportunity to talk to Chris in the past, numerous times. Very sharp individual. It's got a lot of great perspectives on this topic. So I'm very excited to kind of dive into this topic with him on this. For those of you that are, joining us live, as you know, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So as, Chris and I are having our conversation, if you have a question or comment for Chris, you can do so via the submit a question button. And I'll keep an eye on it. And if it's a good and appropriate question, we've got time, I'll weave it into the conversation. Just a reminder that if you are joining us as a visitor, you do have to sign in first before you can ask a question. So with that, Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Adrian. It's good to be here.
Chris, whenever I have a new guest on the program, and this is kind of the first time for you to be on Talking Logistics, I always like to kind of get a sense of, how and why they got involved with this industry. So why don't we start there before we kind of dive into the topic at hand? Tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics, and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Lean Logistics.
Sure. So I did my undergrad work in computer science and mathematics. I was a dual major and didn't take a single supply chain course in college. After spending some time at a couple other employers, I ended up with Lean Logistics in late 2004. And I think, like a lot of supply chain professionals, it was entirely by chance, not by design. I think the majority of folks working in that industry didn't necessarily intend on being there. So I started as a software developer and over several years took on different roles of increasing accountability, landing me in my current position as Vice President of Research and Development. So today I'm responsible for our product management, which is what we build next and why we build it. Our infrastructure team, so our sysadmins, our network admins, DBAs, the guys that keep the lights on for our software. And then, of course, our software developers and the support staff, the quality assurance specialists, those that help us put out new versions of our software. So, again, like a lot of people, I didn't expect to be in the supply chain space, but that's where I found myself, and it's been a great place to be for the last 10 years.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's been one of the common themes when I ask this question of my guests, how do they got involved in the industry? And I would say at least half, if not more, started their careers in in other areas or kind of over the course of time found themselves in a supply chain logistics role. And like I always say, my background's in manufacturing and engineering, and that's what my degree is in. And I've been doing now supply chain logistics for over 17 years. So a great background. Certainly technology is playing such a crucial role in supply chain management. In many ways, it's one of those core foundational elements, right? It's almost hard to imagine how to manage supply chain management today without technology playing a key role. So let's go straight to kind of the question that's suggested by our title, right? Which is, why is transportation management technology essential for companies to execute the transportation management strategy?
To put it simply, it's because you'll fail without it. Now, that's probably a little harsh. At least it'll be very difficult to know whether or not you're succeeding in executing your strategy without a technology that backs it up, right? The use of transportation technology helps with some of the low-hanging fruit, right? The automation of repetitive tasks. But it certainly does more than that, right? It's going to help enforce and measure compliance to best practices. It's going to capture a whole wealth of data and, done correctly, help you turn that data really into information that you can use to improve not just your transportation practices, but your whole supply chain. And then one of the things that our customers cite very frequently as a kind of difficult to measure and sometimes even unanticipated benefit of using technology to manage their transportation is simply the visibility that it provides. A lot of folks, especially those not using transportation technology on a daily basis, once they get a system fully implemented, they start to learn and to see things that are happening within their supply chain that they never knew existed. And sometimes that's thousands of dollars of savings, and sometimes it's literally millions of dollars of savings. But having the technology and implementing it and incorporating it into their daily process was what actually exposed some of those things that they hadn't previously seen within their network. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some big, great companies that are doing this, like we like to say, on crayons and spreadsheets, right? And they're doing it well. It just requires a massive amount of work to not have technology helping to enable that process.
Yeah, you hit on some points that I'm sure that we'll probably dive in deeper a little bit later. I mean, you talked about obviously visibility, right? And that's a key, you know, priority for a lot of companies in terms of, you know, understanding, you know, we've set this direction, right? Are we moving towards that direction in as quickly as we want to be, as effectively as we want to be? So you need that kind of that data, that information, you know, that goes in with visibility, which is the other component, which is business intelligence and analytics. I think those are key components to it, along with obviously the automation of you know, some of these business processes that maybe companies are doing, you know, manually today. And no doubt, I mean, I often joke that you know, Excel is probably the most used enterprise business application out there, and certainly you see a lot of that still in transportation management. So let me ask a question here though, and this might be a philosophical one, maybe it's not, but I mean, should companies take technology capabilities and requirements into consideration when they're kind of developing their transportation strategy? So kind of, you know, looking at this as they're developing it as part of the process, or, you know, should technology influence a company? You know, is this something that technology should respond to the strategy, right? So is it part of the strategy development process, or you develop the strategy first and then say, how can technology adapt or respond to it? What are your thoughts on that? Or what do you see companies doing?
Yeah, so I'm afraid that it's actually a little bit of both, right? And that's not the answer that anybody necessarily likes to hear, but that's the reality of it. And so let's take a simple example to illustrate that point. You know, suppose you're a medium-sized shipper that runs a modest private fleet, doing some multi-stop delivery to certain end customers where you think it makes sense in your network. And you develop a transportation strategy that says, you know what, running that private fleet is really expensive. What can we do to reduce the cost of that private fleet? And somebody suggests, well, if we had access to real-time traffic information and in-route automatic reoptimization of where the drivers should head next and where they should go to, that has the potential to make our private fleet substantially more efficient, and then that gets incorporated in part of the transportation strategy. Part of the issue with doing that with your technological blinders on, if you will, is that those solutions, while they exist in the marketplace, tend to be relatively expensive and sometimes hard to implement, heavily reliant upon very solid, good, clean, real-time data, and it's going to require a significant amount of change management. If your drivers are used to running static routes, having a system that's dynamically rerouting them midday sometimes leads to a lot of issues. And that's a lot of what we see if the transportation strategy is created without the technology in mind. They can be misaligned. But at the same time, people should expect their transportation providers to adapt. Right? So consumers are buying differently, right? Omnichannel is a huge buzzword, and I'm tired of hearing it as much as the next guy, but that's the reality, right? And I do it too. I just bought a pair of backpacks for my daughters off of Amazon, right? 5 years ago, I would have gone to the store to do precisely that same activity. And so technology needs to adapt to the changing transportation strategy, And these companies have to change their transportation strategy. It's not necessarily by choice. So at the same time that you can't develop a transportation strategy without looking at available technology, the technology needs to be able to adapt to transportation strategies that in many ways are actually being forced upon the companies using those technologies. It's a little bit of both.
Great, yeah, great example, and I think you're right. I mean, it's almost like a life cycle or cyclical, you know, continuous feedback loop, if you will, you know, where you really, you know, to your point, you have to take what the existing state of technology is and what's possible, but at the same time, providers of technology need to listen to the directions that companies want to take with regards to their supply chain and transportation operations and strategy based on what they have to respond to from their customers and respond accordingly in terms of providing those capabilities. You know, so I think kind of then diving into that aspect of it in terms of responding and technology adapting or evolving over time. I mean, you've had the opportunity to be there at Lean Logistics now for over a decade. So you've seen, you know, and a lot has changed over the past decade. I mean, I've been covering this market for a bit longer than that. And obviously there's been a lot of big changes in the industry, whether it's, you know, software as a service, whether it's just, you know, cloud computing and all that. So I'd be interested in kind of get your take. I mean, what is your perspective on the, you know, current state of transportation management technology and kind of what's the big difference today versus say 5 or 10 years ago?
Yeah, you hit on one. I mean, one of the biggest differences that I've personally seen over the last 10 years is the expectation and the knowledge about hosted solutions. And that could be hosted in a very simple sense where the technology provider is hosting a technology solution on behalf of the purchaser, of the shipper that's using it. Or like Lean Logistics offers, it could be a true software subscription where we have a multi-tenant environment, but either way, the acceptance and the preference in many cases for that software delivery model has been a drastic shift in the last 10 years. I still remember a couple of years after starting with Lean Logistics, we spent a lot of time within our sales cycle actually educating the potential buyer about the software delivery model in which we offered our software. You know, fast forward 7 or 8 years, and now people understand it much better and in many ways have come to expect it. That's been a huge shift in the industry, not just from a transportation technology, of course, but across the board. I think one shift that's more pronounced in the transportation technology world is actually the increasing breadth and depth of existing systems. 10 years ago, people might run their supply chain on 12 or 15 different point-specific and not particularly well-integrated applications, right? There wasn't a lot of talking between those systems. Nowadays, the expectation is you're doing more with fewer systems, and those systems are tightly integrated, right? They're sharing data from the TMS to the WMS to the ERP, very transparently and in near real time. The big thing I've seen in the last 5 years, if those previous two trends are a little bit longer reaching, a more recent trend in the technology space, again, not necessarily directly related to transportation software, is the true consumerization of IT, right? People have devices and consumer level software that they use on a daily basis that's clean, that's simple, that has all the information they need, but nothing they don't. And then they go to work, they don't expect to use a black screen with green lettering on it anymore, right? The expectation for what a user interface should be has drastically altered. And that's been a trend literally just in the last 3 to 5 years, where people have higher expectations of the user experience of their enterprise level software.
Yeah, that last point that you brought up, absolutely. I actually a year or two ago wrote a blog post about whether user interface is becoming a competitive differentiator for supply chain vendors, software vendors, because you're right. I think we've all become so used to on the consumer side, as in our private lives, to using you know, the Googles and the Amazons and the Facebooks and kind of that user experience. And then we're kind of when we look at the work environment and we see kind of that the user experience that we get at work, where for I know one of the big complaints I often hear from enterprise software users is, gosh, you know, I've got to open three different windows and I got to click 15 different times to execute, you know, a certain process or to find out this data and information. And I think that kind of feedback, I think obviously in your current role, you know, that's raised the priority level in terms of making enterprise software applications more intuitive, easier to use, and more worker friendly, if you will, and aligning it to kind of the millennial and workforce and those that are, you know, right behind them entering the workforce today, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. People like me, I'm of that generation. I'm on the front end of it, but I am of that generation. And it was definitely eye-opening, coming into the workforce and seeing, to be blunt, how low the bar was set for enterprise applications with respect to usability. And it's something that has changed and has become a competitive differentiator, in very recent years. This is a very new trend in the industry, in the technology industry as a whole.
So obviously, you know, usability, you know, becoming much more important. So, you know, relative to kind of what you're hearing from clients about, you know, the transportation goals and strategies, you know, what TMS capabilities are most important to them today or most in demand?
Usability is certainly one of them, but that's pretty high in the pyramid of needs, if you will. A lot of what companies are looking for, especially those that aren't using a software solution today, are actually relatively basic functionality, if you will. It's robust planning, it's rate management, it's carrier selection, it's appointment scheduling, it's execution tracking, and then reporting and visibility to it all. I mean, that's the 80-20 rule, right? That's if you're not using a software package today, those are the things that are going to drive truly significant value into your organization. But those that are using a technology today, you know, be it a self-grown one or a different provider, a lot of them are looking for that next layer, right? That next 20%, in which usability is certainly part of it. But other big value adds are proactive notifications, right? The ability to manage by exception rather than having a huge amount of touch to everything within your transportation management space, especially when you're doing hundreds, if not thousands, of orders a week. You really only want to spend time and manual effort on those that need some specific attention. Two other areas, robust analytics and data discovery. So that's taking more than just being able to extract or export information from the technology. It's actually being able to do something with it, right? It's one thing to know 10 loads were late last week. It's another thing to be able to delve down right into each of those 10 loads and identify what's common or perhaps what's not, right? There could be 10 different reasons that those loads were late, or they could all be to the same consignee, or they could all be in the same lane and there was weather. But without having some sort of data discovery capability, sometimes it's hard to get at that information. And people that have an existing solution today, that's one of the places where some solutions in the marketplace fall a bit short. I'd say the other is usable optimization that generates executable results. And I've been on a soapbox on that one for probably a couple of years now, but it's still something that a lot of times you see in companies using TMS technology, robust, good TMS technology, that aren't fully utilizing the optimization capabilities, or for one reason or another, aren't able to execute upon the suggested results.
I want to kind of explore optimization a little bit here, but before that, do you find that, you know, when it gets to business intelligence and analytics, you know, you talked about diving into kind of the metrics or diving into what's going on, right, to kind of get that more deeper understanding. You know, one of the terms that I'm hearing a lot and seeing, you know, providers talking about is kind of getting toward predictive analytics or and prescriptive, right, capabilities. So having the system not only tell me or show me the trend, but position recommended actions to take either based on some rules that I've already applied, or based on, hey, every time this happens, this is the action that you've taken. So maybe this is what you should take again, this action again, to correct or rectify this situation. Your thoughts on predictive analytics and the solutions being more prescriptive?
Yeah, so a lot of people like to talk about the three P's. You're hitting on the two of them. The other one that people start with is actually precise. And so this isn't the first time I've heard the three P's, but it's nice to know that isn't something we invented. Other people are speaking that same language. So precise, right, that starts with you have to have good data to do anything. And then it's into the predictive. And I think we're there, right, as an industry, as one of several leading technology providers, I think we're there with respect to some of the predictive. And so one of the things that we can do, for instance, is take a look at historical data, identifying those places where, you know, pickup or delivery windows were missed, and then do true statistical analysis, multiple linear regression tests and things of that nature, to identify what variables contributed to those pickups or deliveries, respectively, being late. And a lot of times it differs from one shipper to another. In some cases, it can be primarily attributed to order lead time. In some cases, it's the time from tender acceptance to first pickup. In some cases, it's how far in advance of the first pickup or the delivery was the appointment scheduled. But we can start to identify, right, by doing that analysis, what are those failure points that lead to some downstream negative impact. And so that's where you can really genuinely get into the predictive to say, hey, if this carrier hasn't accepted this tender within 24 hours of picking up a load, it increases its likelihood of being late by 20%. And literally, those are the types of examples that we've seen. Now, I don't think we're there, regardless of what marketing teams around the world would like to tell you. I don't think we're there with respect to the prescriptive side of things. When that carrier's appointment isn't there, or they haven't accepted the load within 24 hours, the most prescriptive thing that we suggest today is pick up the phone and call them or shoot them an email to find out what's going on and encourage them to move the load past that milestone within its transportation life cycle. The idea of having some automated behavior is there, and we can automate simple things like, hey, I'll dispatch a workflow task to that carrier, reminding them to create an appointment. But it's really about automating some of the things that you would have naturally done manually than it is really about prescribing something that you wouldn't have come up with on your own. That's what I see with respect to the three P's in today's technology space.
Great. No, and I love the examples, and I agree with you in terms of where we are today. And I think that first one, that precise one, is a key point, because I think it to me it's foundational, right? Without timely, accurate, and complete data, you know, everything else falls apart, right? So you have to have that precise element to it. So let's go back to optimization, which you talked a little bit about, and you know, you talk to anybody in supply chain management technology, or even analysts like myself, and you know, that word gets tossed around a lot, right? And the key thing is that I think there's a lot of confusion. I think from your perspective that there's a lot of misunderstanding about what optimization is and isn't, or how it should be used or shouldn't be used. So what's your take on optimization?
So I have two things that I occasionally get on my soapbox about. One, you've already mentioned, the term optimization gets used way too loosely, right? So as a mathematics guy, optimization is a very mathematical pursuit, right? It has to be something that's modeled with variables, conditionals, and goal statements. When people use phrases like process optimization and workflow optimization, they'd probably be better off using process improvement and workflow improvement, which are good and valid pursuits, but rarely are they backed up with any mathematical rigor. So that's one of the misconceptions I tend to see within the industry, and honestly, the overuse of the word optimization. The other piece is a lot of times when people talk about optimization, especially in the transportation space, they don't fully grasp necessarily the complexity of the problems being solved. A lot of people like to ask the question, hey, you know, do you guys optimize shipment consolidation and vehicle routing? And the reality is, absolutely, so do most other vendors in this space. But one of the things that people don't necessarily understand is that optimization doesn't always guarantee the best possible answer. In fact, more often than not, the problems are so large and so complex and have so many potential solutions that there's literally a class of problems in computer science and computational theory known as NP-hard. These are problems that, with all the computers in all the world, millions of years would not be enough time to explore every possible solution. So the best we can hope to do is give good answers in reasonable amounts of time. So even though there's a lot of mathematical rigor behind it, there still can be huge differences, huge disparities in solution quality from one technology or one provider to the next, even though it's all kind of lumped under the heading of optimization. It's more complex than I think it gets credit for.
Yeah, no, great points. And I think I'll admit that I'm probably guilty of perhaps overusing that word or misusing that word on occasion. But, you know, one of the other things I'm seeing or hearing out there is because of the rise of, you know, you talked about there's some problems that no matter how many computers, you know, you can put all the computers in the world and millions of years, you're not going to get to the solution. But is it fair to say that because of cloud computing today and the fact that companies have, you know, in many cases, you can almost think of almost infinite computing power relative to what it was just a few years ago, that the types of problems that they can try to analyze or the complexity of questions that they're trying to solve for is more doable today than it was a few years ago because of the advancements that have taken place, both from a availability of computing power as well as advancements on the software side?
Absolutely, it contributes to it. And I think if you were to talk to the previous question about what's changed in the last 10 years, certainly the availability of public cloud infrastructure in an elastic manner, right, that allows you to bring online additional computing capacity at a moment's notice has been a big shift in the last 10 years. But the shift started even earlier than that with multi-core processor architectures, right? So back in the 80s and even through most of the 90s, most people's laptops and even most servers would have one, at most two processors in them. And nowadays, the software and the hardware has evolved so that there's massive parallelism. But it changes the paradigm. You have to program differently in order to take advantage of that hardware. And so some of our servers and our infrastructure have 96 processor cores in them. And they're not terribly expensive. We're talking $10,000 to $12,000, literally for 96 cores of processing capacity. And to your point, because the software has evolved and the programming process has evolved to take advantage of that parallelism, you can solve problems today that are 10 times as large as the problems you could solve 10 years ago at a given price point. And certainly it has led to a significant alteration, not only in problem size and complexity, but also in solution quality per unit time. And that continues to evolve and accelerate with public cloud providers like AWS and Azure providing access to literally hundreds of machines at very low cost.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, Kevin, along the same lines in terms of technological advancements and kind of the buzz out there is mobile, you know, technologies, right? That's all, you know, all of us, you know, carry computers in our pockets now with iPhones and Android smartphones and everything else. So what role is mobile playing in the transportation management market in terms of in helping with the management of those processes?
To be honest, it's not playing a huge role yet. There's yet to be, from what I've seen, the truly killer apps, right, for mobile enablement. There's stuff that my phone does that's hard to live without. But at the same time that there's a lot of things that my phone is great at, there's still a lot of times where my laptop is actually a much better platform. And unfortunately, a lot of transportation planning, data analysis, business intelligence, reporting and analytics actually benefits from a much more robust interface, something with large screen resolution that people actually prefer to do often at their desk. Now, that's not to say that there isn't places where mobile enablement is adding a lot to the transportation management space, but it tends to be an enabler, right? And it tends to be a little bit more on the periphery of things in terms of getting those proactive notifications that I talked about before, being able to do small and point-specific tasks and correspondence. Giving suppliers, carriers, other transportation trading partners another avenue for data entry. That's especially helpful when you're working with small customers, small carriers, small suppliers that don't necessarily have robust, fully integrated ERP systems. It provides another avenue for data entry, but there isn't necessarily a lot of, like I like to say, killer apps in the mobile space for transportation planning quite yet.
Yeah, I think where I've seen the examples are kind of what you just talked about, right? It's providing the opportunity, particularly on the transportation side with carriers, to be able to do proof of delivery, being able to send status messages, being able to track where they are via the GPS on the phone, so on and so forth. So certainly, we're seeing greater adoption in those areas, but I agree. I've yet to come across what I would consider as well a killer app in transportation management from a mobile device standpoint. Now, so we've talked about mobile, we've talked about optimization, we've talked about visibility, business intelligence, and those are all kind of the features and functions that when I talk to manufacturers, retailers, 3PLs, folks that are interested in TMS. I mean, they always tend to, focus on the features and functions, right? And here's my laundry list of things that I want the software to do, right? And that's kind of their first pass at kind of trying to figure out what kind of solution they're looking for. And what I tell them is that, those are all things are important, but they're kind of overlooking what I consider to be a critical element of a transportation management solution, and which is, network connectivity, right? So one of, and obviously, being a software as a service provider, network-based provider, you're kind of in the front lines of this. And I feel like I still, no matter how much I've talked about it, that we're still kind of in the education phase of this in terms of, you mentioned earlier that, a decade ago, you had to educate people on the deployment model and, SaaS and so on and so forth. And we've gotten over that hump. I think the hump now is to get companies to look beyond software as a service as just a deployment and pricing model and look at it from what kind of unique benefits are available from a network-based deployment. So I guess my question is, for those that may not be familiar with what we're talking about here is what is, network connectivity? Why is it so important, and how can companies recognize value from it?
Yeah. So network connectivity, from my perspective, is basically about having, seamless, low maintenance, reliable data exchange that's pre-built in many cases between the participants in a supply chain. And so a lot of times that's between the suppliers and a manufacturer, between a manufacturer and a distributor, between those players and their carrier network, be they truckload carriers, LTL, ocean, air cargo. It's all about having that seamless data interchange capability where another participant, be it a supplier, a carrier, another distributor or manufacturer, can essentially, through a single point of contact, right, enter into that electronic data interchange between those providers. Because there's a lot of information that it's exchanged between companies today, but not particularly efficiently, and a lot of times it's in a one-off process. So a lot of times the carrier has to have 60 different integrations to all 60 of the shippers with whom they're doing business. Now in our model, a carrier has connectivity on average to about 30 different shippers within our network. That's about how many shippers per carrier we see within our execution base through one single point of contact, one single integration. And that single integration means that you have consistent data in near real time, or in many cases real time, that you simply don't get via web portal entry, phones and faxes and emails and things of that nature. And so having that network connectivity between all these trading partners is actually what enables, to your point, so much of the functionality. You know, those proactive notifications that we talked about before. If your carriers aren't connected to you, if you're relying on manual entry, phone, fax, or even through a web-enabled portal of things like arrival and departure information, you may not actually learn that something was late until half a day or a full day after it was actually late, which is going to be way too late to do any action upon it to rectify it, or proactive notification of downstream impact and consequences thereof. And so I think companies don't necessarily always realize the full value of that network connectivity, but I think most of them expect it, right? And a lot of times it's not until they get into the process do they realize that if it's not there already, it's going to be a significant undertaking to get all their trading partners exchanging information with one another.
Yeah, no, I think that's I like a definition of network connectivity. I think it's very clear and concise and to the point. You know, I think the other value that I see is, and I know you do some of this, you know, there, but you know, obviously when you have all of this data flowing through a common network, you know, there are opportunities to gain insights. You know, what I call network level business intelligence that, you know, a lot of companies just can't get any other way, right? I mean, what I see with BI is companies have, you know, they can see how they're doing compared to last year. They can see how they're doing compared to, you know, compared to plan. But, you know, the question that they always have, you know, are always challenged to answer is, well, how are we doing compared to others in our industry, or others that have a similar transportation network, or some external benchmark that they can measure themselves on? And I think that's the opportunity that exists as well, you know, within kind of this network environment, is to provide that kind of network level, broader external perspective to the table. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a huge advantage of the network model as well. And again, the timeliness is a huge component, right? With everybody on a single instance and everybody exchanging that information, you can become aware of those external benchmarks much faster than in most other models. And so if you see spot market rates trending upward in a certain market, you can very quickly ask and answer the question, are other shippers like me experiencing these same issues? The same thing can be applied to contract rates, to tender acceptance, to on-time performance, to the impact of weather on particular supply chain events and timeliness of deliveries. And being in a network model really makes that information readily accessible, as opposed to having to be a huge external undertaking in order to derive and deliver those types of insights. That's a huge benefit of that model.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, Chris, we're getting short on time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question, you know, as a way to wrap up. So, you know, what question should transportation executives, you know, ask themselves to kind of assess whether their technology capabilities are well aligned with their transportation strategy and goals, and what actions can they take today to kind of get started?
I think that the biggest and most obvious place to start is asking yourself, is your transportation technology an enabler or an obstacle? And a lot of times, if you're not getting the value that you expected out of your technology, it's easy to say that it's the technology's fault. But I would challenge a lot of transportation executives to ask the follow-up question, which is why, right? Why is it enabling me, or why is it an obstacle to me? Do I have a relationship, a partnership with my vendor? Are they adapting to my needs? Am I adapting to their capabilities and industry best practices? Because ultimately, like all relationships, there's give and take here and there's a continued evolution. And so the answer is sometimes arrived at too quickly. A lot of people are ready to say, yes, my technology is working. That might be the case, but a lot of times because the technology continues to evolve, there's more you can get from it and more you can do with it. On the other hand, people will say, well, my technology just doesn't meet my needs or it doesn't fit my business. Then I challenge folks to step back and say, why? Why is that, right? What are the contributing factors to that? Because there's a lot of good technology out there, but sometimes it's hard to use or hard to use well, and it requires conscious effort on both parties in order for it to be successful.
Chris, great insights and advice there. And with that, like I always say at the end of every episode, we always manage to just scratch the surface on the topics that we discuss. But I think we got a good head start here today, and on this topic of the essential role that transportation management technology plays in helping companies execute their transportation strategy. So thank you very much for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me, Adrian. Always a pleasure.
I want to thank all of you that joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand and you'd like to ask Chris a question, you can find this episode on talkinglogistics.com, and you can post a question or a comment there, and I'm sure Chris will be more than happy to respond via that medium. And with that, thank you very much for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.